would this whole conversation become, do you think, more animated and interesting if it was opened up to the diaconate?
Not necessarily. I think the diaconate is kind of a separate question because there's a different historical precedent for the women, ordination of women to the diaconate. You know, the Orthodox Church used to have female deacons, and no one really knows why the practice of ordaining women to the diaconate fell away, and that question of, like, why did it disappear, since that can't be answered, has been one of the reasons why the bishops have been so reluctant to entertain the idea of bringing it back. But the fact remains that there is a historical precedent for that service for women. Now, it's a complicated question because when women were deacons, it was in a society in which it was inappropriate for male priests to go and baptize female converts. It was inappropriate for them to go into the private areas of a woman's home, you know, for unction or whatever. You know, there were very rigid social rules about the interaction of men and women. So it was necessary for the priest to have a female clergy member who could act on his behalf in ministering to his flock, the members of whom were women. Now, that social context is totally gone. And so I think there's a question about, you know, even though there's a historical precedent for the ordination of women to the diaconate, what exactly is it that they're going to do? Because the historical need for women as deacons, I don't think exists anymore. But if the church as a body were to develop a sense that that need has returned, maybe in a different form, but that there was some kind of need. Again, if the community of the church calls women to ordination in the diaconate, I think it's something that we should consider. But as yet, I haven't seen anyone express that need that would necessitate the ordination of women to the diaconate. So that's why I think it's really a different conversation.
No, it is correct, isn't it, that there's no indication that there were ever women deacons liturgically, I mean, right? There's...
Well, it's kind of, I mean, it's interesting because there does seem to be some indication that women deacons, you know, when they were ordained, the ordination service was the same, and the women deacons received the chalice, but whereas the male deacons, and I'm not that familiar with the ordination service, like they had to do something with the chalice, the female deacons returned the chalice directly onto the altar. They received it, but then they put it right down. And then in the service, the female deacons were communed on the altar with the rest of the clergy. But they, as far as we can tell, didn't have a liturgical activity going on in terms of, like, assisting in the consecration of the bread and the wine in the Eucharist. So in that sense, no, they didn't have an active liturgical role, but they were there being ordained, being communed with the rest of the clergy. And that actually kind of brings up another question about the ordination of women diaconate, because the diaconate in and of itself, just the male diaconate, has changed dramatically over the centuries, and deacons no longer have the same function that they did at the inception of that ministry. You know, the deacons in the book of Acts, they're ordained in order to serve the poor. They're the extension of the apostles into the community. Liturgical service doesn't really seem to be the focus of their ministry. And that has, it's disappeared. Deacons are not about social ministry at this point. And some would argue that deacons have become just kind of a stepping stone to the priesthood. Priests can serve a liturgy without a deacon, don't have to be there. And there's some commentary about, you know, deacons are really supposed to be the arm of the bishop in the community. He's not really the sidekick of the priest. He is the presence of the bishop in the community. And that function also seems to have disintegrated. So in my father was a deacon for many years, and when I had a conversation about this with him, his reaction was, well, I think we have to figure out what deacons are supposed to be doing before we would talk about ordaining women to the diaconate, because we don't even know what our male deacons are supposed to be doing right now. So again, that's another reason why ordination of women to the diaconate, I think, is a whole separate conversation.
Mm-hmm. So, given that the priesthood's fullest expression is with males, did they talk at all about how it would be diluted if women were to serve as priests?
I think what they say is that the priesthood, the service of the priest would be compromised. Neither Father Tom nor Father John Baird at any point say, like, they don't say for a woman, if a woman served the liturgy would be invalid. I mean, a woman couldn't do that because, you know, at this point she can't be ordained to the priesthood in the Orthodox Church. So, I mean, it's kind of a question that they don't address because it's not an option as yet. At least that's my sense. Is there another hand? Yeah.
Thank you for a spectacular presentation.
Oh,
it was just exhilarating at so many levels. I wanted to get your reaction to something that's outside your five authors, but some thinking and critique that I've been looking at recently, which is there's some Orthodox scholarship looking at the sex issue in first century Christianity. Some of the sources use Mary Magdalene as a lens to look at that. Mm-hmm. And what they argue, and I was so struck by what you said about the radical nature of first century Christianity, what they argue is that it was radical in ways that got lost as a result of some very specific things. That men and women were operating in that first century in a way with equivalency in terms of what they did to fulfill the mission, if you will. Mm-hmm. And one of these, the thought goes from this analysis that it was actually an unintended consequence of the monastic system itself over three or four centuries that decoupled, as men and women started living apart, and particularly the guys becoming overly insulated and detached from this historical grounding where the sacred feminine and masculine, if you will, were operating together in the mission. Mm-hmm. And they just got it wrong over the course of 300 or 400 years. A kind of neurosis manifested that led to this hierarchy being imposed on the system, which was not there in the first century. I find that very persuasive. And did you run across anything like that? Have you heard anything like that?
No, I really didn't, because I very deliberately did not look at any texts that were from non-Orthodox sources. When I put together my proposal for the thesis, as advised, actually, by Dr. John Clintus down at the GTU, he's like, don't look at anything non-Orthodox, because you'll just wind up swimming in a sea of all kinds of proposals and arguments and such. It would just be overwhelming. So I didn't come across that. I don't know, Mother, if you want to respond to that or you want to risk me responding to that.
Why don't you, and then I'll correct you.
Well, my off-the-cuff response to that would be that in the first place, it seems to me that, you know, in the book of Acts and in the Gospels, in the epistles of St. Paul, there seems to still be respect for the masculine for masculine authority, and so I would question, like, well, what sources are they pointing to when they say that in fact there was equivalency between the sexes in the early church? Because just thinking about scripture, I don't see evidence of equivalency at that point. And then my other thought, you know, in regards to monasticism is that so many of our texts from the early church, well, early church may be the wrong word, we have so many texts from the Desert Fathers, from monastic sources, speaking to monastic sources, and one can kind of get the impression that it's sort of an enclosed world that becomes blinkered. But I think that does a disservice to the existence of all the parish churches that were, you know, still thriving at that time. You know, St. John Chrysostom was serving in these huge cathedrals. I think there's still a very healthy parish life, even while monasticism was sort of flowering, so to speak. And even though the parish life doesn't generate, you know, a lot of writings and stuff, I don't think that there would be such a dramatic shift in how the church functions as a whole without creating some kind of conflict between the supposed monastic disintegration and the rest of the Christian community. If something like that was happening, I would think there would be some kind of reaction from bishops looking over parish blocks, from members of parishes, from monastics, like trying to make an argument for this kind of change. I just think there, it would be likely that there would be some reflection of that sort of shift in historical documents. I don't know whether you want to add or correct me.
No, I think that's a very good answer. Seth was all wrong. No, that was. I think that was a great answer. But I would have. I wouldn't have addressed your specific question. I would have said something I was going to say anyway, which is that, you know, what Father Tom Hopko and what the, you know, particularly Madame Bersiegel and Dr. Karras do, they're sort of mirror images of each other. It's sort of like, okay, I can't wrap my head around all of this together. So I'm going to take this part and say this isn't the authentic Christianity, right? So it's like, so Father Tom says, okay, you know, I can't take what these, you know, patristic sources are saying and make it come together with what the scripture and what our liturgy is saying. So I'm going to set those aside. The others are doing somewhat opposite a thing, is they're saying, okay, well, you know, yes, we've never ordained women, but, you know, that's because we've missed the kernel of Christianity. And well, I'll go back to one of my hobby horses, which is, the fathers are very serious about the fact that sin makes us insane. I can't trust myself, and when I, in my ability to think straight, and when I go around saying, okay, you know, the fathers are conflicted, to me, the first thing I have to say is, you know, if it's probably me that's conflicted. You know, and if I can't hold this all together, then, you know, before I just start, you know, throwing out the baby or the bathwater, you know, why can't I hold this together? And I think by being able to look at something and saying, okay, beginning to see why I can't hold it together, I think that's the beginning of maybe figuring out how it all does, in fact, fit. And I'm not, you know, I don't, Sister Marguerite's the one who did this research, I haven't, I'm certainly not going to pretend that I can make this all fit. But I guess how it's related to what you were saying is, you know, we just come out with our, we take one little thing that we say, this is the kernel. And then we make all these wild, you know, structures to hold it. And I just think that is bound to cause trouble. So for me, you know, if the fathers are saying X and the, you know, the liturgy is saying Y and scripture is saying Z, my assumption is X, Y, and Z all fit together nicely in the same house. And my problem is, why don't I see it? And that's definitely a faith position, you know, but I don't see how I can be orthodox and just willy-nilly throw out some part of the tradition. So, which you've heard me say about 5,000 times, I'm sure. Now it's 5,001. But anyway.
Hey, Dale, one last thing.
You mentioned documentation is, of this period of time, is rather sparse. But with Peter Rogers, a text critic, and I ran across a small fragment that came from the late 2nd, early 3rd century from Egypt, where it's part of a contractual agreement between a priest and a Yarrow schema monk. Mm-hmm. Those titles were there long before St. Anthony. And so there was, whether the Therapeutae from Egypt, or were they Christian, were they Orthodox monastics in their early years, they still had a hierarchical awareness within the community that may be missed and may not be really recognized until, you know, the whole thing is published. But to have monastic hierarchic language a century before we think it really began, and most of them, especially at that period of time, were coming from very open areas to sort of hear God in the silence, you know, and so there's a whole lot yet to learn.
So, Roger, if you want to pursue that question, talk to Dave. Okay, well, now we're almost at 6 o'clock.
Oh, we are.
On record for how long we talked about.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for your kindness.